Well, I suppose in the really short term, the French Revolution famously leads to a sort of state of anxiety and a crackdown on civil liberties, even attempts to try and crack down on the sorts of public meetings which generate petitions, which had actually been guaranteed under the Glorious Revolution, the Bill of Rights after that. So some of the crackdowns on sort of public gatherings and agitations after the French Revolution directly almost kind of kill the first mobilisation of anti-slavery campaigning from 1787 to 92. That said, I think you could see that the kind of immediate political circumstances of war with Napoleon's France, with revolutionary France, then Napoleon's France, are absolutely integral to how abolition happened this way. So it's not necessarily saying that anti-slavery might not have emerged or might not have succeeded without a French Revolution over the Channel, but it definitely kind of completely restructured what why things happened in the way they did. Mm-hmm. So, for example, when Napoleon does restore slavery in the French Empire, he does British abolitionists a great service in that he's now removed from the taint of kind of foreign revolutionary influence, anti-slavery as a concept. And I think you can actually look to the sort of immediate circumstances under which the Slave Trade Abolition Act of 1807 manages to get passed to the kind of wartime circumstances, because you have the Battle of Trafalgar in 1805, which ends up leading to a kind of de facto blockade of France due to British naval dominance. Admiral Nelson was famously hated the anti-slave trade movement and, you know, thought, like many people in the Royal Navy, that the slave trade was the nursery of British seamen. In a sense, a kind of side effect of winning the naval war during the Napoleonic Wars is that by default, the French slave trade is suppressed, which means the classic argument of, well, if we stop it, the French will just take over, is not immediately relevant in the middle of the war, because French trade is being suppressed anyway. You then, as the University of Kent at Canterbury historian Roger Anstey argued first, have an 1806 Act, which by targeting the supply of enslaved Africans to French colonies currently under British occupation during the war, ends up knocking out some of the kind of, it sort of breaches the idea that you're going to suppress a slave trade, but under the guise of saying you don't want to supply slaves to foreign colonies that just happen to currently be occupied during wartime by Britain. And then that helps sort of tee up the 1807 Act, which just bans the slave trade in total. So I think you can say those circumstances are absolutely crucial. And then in 1814-15, there's a huge anti-slave trade petitioning drive again, probably the biggest ever, because, of course, in 1814-15, it's a drive to try and include some sort of anti-slave trade measures in the Congress of Vienna at the end of the Napoleonic Wars. So there's a kind of effort then, a kind of real public anxiety, that because it would be restoring peace with France, if there's no sort of measures in the peace treaty, you would be morally culpable for restoring the French slave trade, which can now resume now the hostilities are over. So it's quite a long answer, but there's lots of, I think, moving parts, which mean that you can't, the history of abolition of the slave trade in the British Empire would be completely different if it wasn't happening in the midst of a multi-generational war with France. Yeah. And I think in particular, Haiti, of course, creates a kind of completely new context, not only in terms of its effect on things like sugar prices, but also in terms of, for pro-slavery people, it's an example of the dangers of talking about black freedom and the dangers of encouraging slave revolt as they see it. For abolitionists, it ends up being kind of weaponized as an example, not of the kind of political sophistication of a kind of anti-slavery of the enslaved, but it ends up in abolitionist mouths as being an example of how slavery's inherent evil means it will end with revolts, end with the kind of political disloyalty of the enslaved, and instead you could co-opt them into being happy and pliant workers, which is exactly, of course, what the plan for post-emancipation was.